The world has a coral issue. Coral lives in tropical oceans, or should. Coral is dying or ailing in many areas, which is of great concern to scientists and people who depend upon creatures who live around coral reefs, and there are lots and lots of those. Oregon State University, with its highly respected marine science program, is keeping an eye on coral, even though there's no coral anywhere near Oregon. The work includes the creation of a documentary film called Saving Atlantis. We have two guests to talk to us about the project. Rebecca Vega Thurber is an OSU associate professor and the principal investigator at the Rebecca Vega Thurber Lab. Pleasure to meet you, Dr. Vega Thurber.
Thank you, Jeffrey. How's your morning?
Going well, thank you. Justin Smith is with us as well. He is the co-director and producer of Saving Atlantis. Hi, Justin.
Good morning. How's it going?
Doing well, thanks. Rebecca, let's start with you. Tell us about the work you do at the Vega Thurber Lab.
Yeah, so we're really interested in the proximate causes of coral decline. So one of the things we do is we travel around the world and we visit coral reefs, we take samples, and we try to figure out what are the drivers that are contributing to the decline of corals that's occurring worldwide. And we're primarily focused on the microbiology, so what diseases, what viruses, what bacteria might be contributing to their untimely mortality.
Well, this is the part that had been going, aha, yesterday afternoon. So, I mean, do coral reefs get viruses? Do they get sick?
Absolutely. There's a number of diseases that corals suffer from, and that's one of the things that we study. We try to define what are those bacteria, what are those viruses, and how are they involved in causing disease and causing the corals to decline. Primarily, we know that there's other factors like temperature or overfishing that can trigger these diseases, and then those corals succumb to the diseases and die ultimately.
And just to make the record straight, I mean, coral is an animal, right?
Absolutely. It's an animal, but one of the important aspects of this animal is that it's in a symbiotic relationship with another microbe, a microscopic algae. And it's that symbiotic relationship between the animal and the plant that allows these corals to flourish in the kinds of environments that they do, tropical reefs.
All right. And Justin Smith, tell us a bit about Oregon State Productions and how long it has existed.
So our group has been a team for approximately almost a decade now, and we were primarily a web-based group, and we did a lot of website design, and we transitioned into a full-time video production group in the last couple of years. So we specialize in documenting research and also creating marketing content for the university, including the Pac-12 commercials that air during the athletic events, and most recently we've gone into producing feature documentaries.
Wow, so that's a pretty broad field of stuff, everywhere from microbiology to football games.
Correct.
So how did this particular project come about, Justin? Tell us about the genesis of it.
This project started as a Dr. Rebecca Vega Thurber had an interest in documenting a research project that she had received funding for and initially brought us into the conversation, and we had developed a series of five videos that was telling more of the science of this story. And as the story evolved, we realized that there was much more potential there, and we worked together to figure out how to develop this into a feature-length documentary. And a lot of that was the result of realizing that there were so many humans connected to these reef systems and wanting to tell their stories as well as the science. And so that's kind of what we aim to do with the documentary.
You said feature-length. How long is Saving Atlantis?
It's 75 minutes.
Okay, that is indeed feature length. We have a little less than that, though. We have a little bit of the clip from the trailer to share with the audience here.
It is devastating. When you look at those stark white photos, you're looking at the face of climate change.
There's nowhere to hide if the water gets warmer.
This isn't just about conservation of ecosystems. This is about the conservation of livelihoods.
The sea is in our body. It's our blood. Life comes from the ocean.
We just take and we take and we take, and there's nobody stopping to think, is this sustainable?
You can either lay down and die or say, this is a challenge that needs to be solved.
The documentary film is called Saving Atlantis from Oregon State Productions. Justin Smith is the co-director and producer. Rebecca Vega Thurber at the Oregon State University Rebecca Vega Thurber Lab is largely involved in the project. You can join the conversation on the exchange at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. There are stunning images that come along with that obviously our listening audience can't see. One of them is just words on the screen, Rebecca Vega Thurber, half destroyed. Is that really how much coral's already dead?
So in 2016, there was a mass bleaching event, and bleaching is when corals lose that symbiotic algae. And this is primarily caused from increased temperatures in the water. And when corals bleach, if they don't recover those algae, they will die. So in 2016, we had El Nino basically slam into climate change at the same time. And that combination devastated some parts of the Great Barrier Reef. And the numbers are pretty stark. So the Great Barrier Reef, it's about the size of Italy. And a third of the reef bleached in that event. And in 1 year, 50 to 60% of that third died. So just imagine if there's a giant forest across Italy and you just burned down a third of it in 1 year. So it was a massive event. And since the Great Barrier Reef is kind of our iconic reef in the world, it was really, really a devastating event, not just for the ecosystem, but the people who live in Australia and for people who care about reefs worldwide.
And I want to make it clear that this is not just about, well, the coral's not as pretty when it's white. I mean, this is a really complex ecosystem. And how important is it to a lot of the creatures that live around it? And what percentage of the ocean's creatures, this is a fascinating thing to me, the percentage of the ocean's creatures that live around coral reefs.
Yeah, coral reefs, they only exist in less than 0.1% of our planet's ocean. But at some point in every organism's life in the ocean, about 25% of all marine organisms exist on coral reefs. So it's a nursery ground. It's this very biodiverse habitat. And corals themselves, they're kind of like the trees in a forest. They form the basic structure of all the reef. And if the corals themselves die, it's like those trees being cut down. There's nothing left for the fish to eat. There's nowhere for the invertebrates to hide. All of the biodiversity leaves when the corals die. So it's a massive issue that we have on coral reefs.
So the bleaching is just the algae dying?
The algae, yes. So the algae will leave during these very hot events. But since the algae provide most of the energy to the coral through photosynthesis, because they're plants, right, so they use the sun, if the coral can't get those sugar reserves from their algae, they will die ultimately. Now, sometimes they can recover, and that's what scientists really hope may occur. But as we saw in that bleaching event in 2016, by 2017, about 50% of those corals did ultimately die.
So, Rebecca, is there a coral first aid? I mean, has somebody figured out a way to get algae back in or at least encourage it to return or something?
So there's a number of projects worldwide that are occurring. Some of the projects are actually selective breeding projects because we can genetically select those algal partners that are more resistant to temperature. But these kind of restoration and selective breeding projects are very small scale, and they've only just begun. And I have to say they're quite controversial in the scientific community. But they are an avenue for restoration. And there are other projects, for example, in our own coral reefs down in Florida, where they're selecting corals that seem to do better themselves under temperature stress. So they're breeding these corals and then they're putting them back out into the reef, hoping that they will essentially repopulate the devastated populations that were declined down in Florida. So there are these ongoing efforts.
So now to make this whole thing visual, and obviously coral is a very visual place, Justin Smith, though, you had so many choices ranging from aerial shots of the Great Barrier Reef through the waves to underwater shots to stuff in the microbiology lab. What approach did you choose to take in making Saving Atlantis to make it the most impactful?
Well, I think what was important for us was to try to bring the viewer to these locations, and I think that was kind of our reasoning behind that wide mix of shot options, and you know, the ability to bring a drone on every trip was just a massive convenience now that the technology is so readily available. And so we basically brought a drone on all of our trips and brought it on the boat, and we're able to catch these aerial perspectives and then just kind of also show more of the surrounding environment. And then of course the diving was a huge element to that. And so just to go on somewhat of a tangent, but an interesting one, you know, we were non-divers when this project
began. I was
began.
Going to ask if you had an experience with the water.
to a very limited extent. I think we had both done a small amount of snorkeling. And so we were training in the Pacific Northwest in Puget Sound midwinter.
Oh.
And so it was a little overwhelming just to acclimatize to that environment and knowing that the ultimate goal would be to travel somewhere tropical. And so both were quite a shock. You know, we had adapted to the dark green water diving up here, and then our first location was the Red Sea off the coast of Saudi Arabia, and it was so clear it was almost disorienting. It was like, you know, you get this vertigo effect when you're basically floating in space.
Right, yeah, because there's nothing around you.
Exactly. It was remarkable, but it was a very steep learning curve to adapt our terrestrial videography skills to underwater. There's just a lot more complexity to it, and not to mention you're on borrowed time when you're underwater. So it was challenging, but I feel like at the end of this nearly 3-year process, we're getting to a reasonably competent state.
And that's just to document the coral, the star of saving Atlantis. But then you mentioned the stories of the people who depend upon the coral reefs. And so how did you go about figuring out who would be the people to help you tell the larger story by telling their own stories?
Yeah, exactly. So that was an interesting challenge because we're on each location shoot for not a great amount of time. I think at most we had about 2 weeks in each spot. And so you're arriving in these locations and you have these cameras and you're pointing them everywhere, and you're also trying to gain trust in the community so people are willing to sit down in front of a camera and tell their stories. And so that was a difficult process, and one ultimately we tried to start immediately when we arrived somewhere and try to, you know, make it clear that we weren't there to exploit anything, but really just to try to enable people to have their voices heard. Well, a lot of the times in these remote areas, that's not the case, and so they may have even had a negative experience with the media group, but we were trying to come at it from a different perspective and, you know, do everybody's story justice.
Rebecca, are people working to help restore the reefs in their own neighborhoods? I mean, they're aware of what's going on out there, that things are different. I just wonder if they're concerned enough to be doing things or change the behavior that might be taking things away from the reefs, anything like that?
Yeah, absolutely. There's lots of local grassroots efforts in many of the countries and locations where reefs are to help restore them from the multitude of stressors that they're experiencing. So good examples are, like, we've heard a lot about plastics in the ocean these days, and drift nets can entangle coral reefs. And there's a lot of grassroots efforts, for example, in the Philippines to remove these nets, to turn them into money for the locals by selling them to carpet companies. There's other examples, like the country of Palau has now, you know, fully banned certain kinds of activities in its own waters to protect the reefs for the locals and for tourism reasons. And even in our own country, there's been numerous efforts to protect the reefs. Hawaii just banned the use of sunscreens that could potentially harm baby corals. So there's a lot of efforts locally and internationally that aim to not just protect the reefs, but also to fix the ones that have been damaged.
We're talking about the documentary film Saving Atlantis, about the effort to help coral reefs around the world, which are in trouble from climate change and a number of other factors. Rebecca Vega Thurber is an associate professor at Oregon State University and the principal investigator of the lab that bears her name. Justin Smith is the co-director and producer of Saving Atlantis through OSU Productions. You can join us at the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Is this as simple, Rebecca, as the water is too warm? I guess I'm thinking for the first time about the fact that we see the same things in the rivers around the region. When the water gets too warm, the things that thrive in warmer water can attack the fish that don't.
Yeah, you know, biologically, it's a very simple process. When things get heated up, metabolism increases. This happens everywhere. And as metabolism increases, problems can occur. So when we do our normal metabolism, we produce reactive oxygen species as a byproduct. That's why we're all told to eat our, you know, antioxidant medications and things like that, foods that are high in antioxidants, because it can damage our DNA. And that's the same thing that's essentially occurring in corals. When it gets too warm, the metabolism of these algae gets out of control, and that causes damage to the host cells, the corals themselves. And the same thing happens in rivers. When it gets too hot, bacteria grow very quickly, and they consume all the oxygen. So all of these processes that are driven by temperature, ultimately the long arm of climate change is impacting all of those things that drive changes in temperature, because all of our physiology is tied somewhat to temperature.
In the trailer for Saving Atlantis, we see people in labs looking into microscopes and then images of what appear to be from the scopes of tiny living things. What's going on there, Rebecca?
Yeah, those tiny little things are those microscopic algae that are living inside these animals. And so they are essentially tiny plants that have partnered with these animals. And so they use sunlight to make sugar for themselves, and then they deliver that sugar to their animal hosts, the corals. And so it's that relationship between them, again, that allows corals to flourish in a habitat like coral reefs are very, very low nutrients, so they're kind of almost like a desert. But this relationship, this interaction between the algae and the animal allows it to really thrive. And they make beautiful images because they're these tiny little plants inside a really cool-looking animal. So
does the algae, is it naturally just occurring there in the water and decides it's going to stick around with the coral? And when the bleaching goes on, does the algae leave or die?
So first, to answer your first question is, these algae can be found in many other invertebrate animals. So they're really good partners. And they will either be transmitted by mom coral, like for those that have babies directly, so we call that vertical transmission. And then it can also be brought in from the environment. So the corals can select the type of symbionts or algae that they want. And yes, in your second question, during bleaching, the algae are both expelled, they're lost. The coral kicks them out, essentially, and they die. So it's both processes. And that process is very damaging to the coral itself because it damages the tissues at the same time. So they lose their symbiotic partner, and their tissues are significantly damaged. So it's kind of death by a thousand cuts.
Justin Smith, I know at Oregon State Productions, your field of view is varied. As we mentioned, everything from field work in the sciences to basketball games potentially. But I mean, how much of a bag of tricks did you have to be able to capture all the images you needed for this? So we're talking about underwater and microscopes, aerials, all that stuff.
Yeah, it was a massive effort, and our team isn't that sizable. There's about five of us total, and everyone kind of brought a different skill set to the table. And so we were able to, some of the footage that you saw in the trailer was captured with a really special microscope at a lab in Hawaii, and then some of the other stuff we were actually able to capture on campus here and just connecting our camera to a microscope and getting to get a feel for that. And there's basically a few of us that are authorized to fly drones, and then a few of us that are certified to dive, and then so we all kind of collaborated to bring each of our unique skill sets together.
Has the drone newness worn off? I mean, I can imagine there's still people like, I want to do the drone today.
Yeah, it's another tool, and it's one that we try to use selectively. I think it's important to use aerial footage to advance the story and not just show off amazing stuff. It's always nice to do that, but I think it quickly becomes a default if you're not reserved about your use. It's another tool, just like operating a tripod or anything else. And it's initially was maybe a little more exciting, but now it's just another tool in the toolbox.
How long was Saving Atlantis in production?
So we shot for over 3 years total, just a couple trips per year and a lot of editing in between.
And you finished it, what, late last year, early this year?
So technically we finished it this year, and our first screening was in February up at the Oregon Museum of Science and Industry. So we're kind of prepping in anticipation of that. And then since then we've done a few more regional screenings and then various film festivals as well.
So Rebecca Vega-Thurber, give us a sense of if there's a hopeful tone or not at the end of this. I mean, are corals doing well in some places? Are they getting any better in places where they have been sick?
I think it's both. So it's a grim story right now. We're at a point in the history of coral reef studies where there's a lot of people who are pretty depressed because of this massive die-off that occurred in the last 2 years. And so I think morale is low in the community, and really trying to push the point to the international society, our community, that we need to do something and time is running out. At the same time, there's a lot of individuals who are working extremely hard. And one of those individuals who's featured in the film, Ruth Gates, she says, you know, people have an amazing capacity for change. And if we work together, we can make change and we can enact, you know, conservation on these places. And our narrator in the story, Peter Coyote, he says something of the equivalent that, you know, corals, they work as a team. They're a collection of animals with an algal partner. And you know, if we as a society try to work together as well, that we can fix some of these really big issues. And I think that's a really hopeful point, in that, you know, we can do many things at different levels, at the local level, at the community level, at our national level, and at the international level, to try to help stave off the effects of climate change and then maybe turn back the tide a little bit of what has happened. And so I do think there's area for hope. But again, time is running out.
Len in Selma, Oregon, sent in an email. He says, as always with environmental issues such as coral, inland folks have no experience with coral reefs, out of sight, out of mind. As a longtime member of Surf Rider, I always pushed for ocean education in inland schools. If we want people to pay attention, we must educate in our schools on the dire problems facing us now and in the future. That from Len in Selma, which raises the question, Justin Smith, are there screenings scheduled for Southern Oregon at all?
At this point, we don't have anything scheduled, but part of our distribution deal that we're potentially signing quite shortly would be a strong educational component that would really work towards making sure this is available in schools and also universities, and for any community group to screen the film at a pretty nominal fee. And so that's our hope, is to make sure this film is in front of as many people as possible, and for that very reason, just kind of further explaining the point why even somebody inland should be aware of this issue and why it may affect them.
And Rebecca, just a couple seconds left. If somebody wants to get a pre-education before they see Saving Atlantis, what's a good website to start with?
Well, they can come to our website, coralmovie.org, and there's a lot of information there about coral reefs themselves, but also about the people who are affected by the loss of these reefs, and some very important things about what people can do to help, and at many different levels. So people can go there and check out our website and see what they can do to help the process.
Coralmovie.org. We're a link to that from our website at jeffexchange.org, and you can also see the trailer there as well. Rebecca Vega Thurber is an associate professor at Oregon State University, principal investigator of the lab that bears her name. Justin Smith is the co-director and producer of Saving Atlantis at Oregon State Productions. Thank you both for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you very much, and have a good day.
You too.
Thanks.